I've been looking at these passages where we're talking about the compassionate heart of Jesus, that he indeed is filled with compassion. So we are, actually, if you read the bulletin, you'll know I chose a different passage than what I picked out this morning. Okay, so just give me that for leeway. It's all good. It's all inspired. But this passage just kind of jumped at me, and I thought, let's just do this. Maybe we'll get back to that other one. But tonight I want to talk about Jesus encountering an overlooked heart. The man that he ministers to through his compassionate heart was completely overlooked by everybody that should have not overlooked him. And he's just sort of a chess piece on the board to them, okay, just to be used and moved around for their own purposes. You'll see that clearly here in just a moment. But it reminds us that simply put, that Jesus values people. He values people. Now, he values other things as well, but people are part of the mix. Can you imagine Jesus as he went about his ministry? Maybe you've had this experience somewhere in life, or maybe you had a boss somewhere where no matter what you did, it was wrong. I don't know if you've ever had one of those experiences. Someone that you just couldn't please, never get it right in their mind. Well, that's how Jesus likely could have, at least, felt when it came to the Pharisees, because everything he did was wrong. Everything he said, they were judging him for, and that's exactly what you find here in Luke chapter 14. I just want to read the first two verses for just a moment, and frankly, it's going to take a little while to set up our application, what we want to learn from it tonight, but so bear with me as we go through a few details we've got to put together. But really, the whole background is, if you look carefully, is identified in these first two verses. Now it happened as he went into the house of one of the rulers of the Pharisees to eat bread on the Sabbath, that they watched him closely. There's about three good clues in there what this is really all about. There's a few more in verse 2. And behold, there was a certain man before him who had dropsy. Stop there for just a moment. As this is set up, it looks very nice on the surface. Jesus, will you come and have a meal with me on the Sabbath day? Doesn't that sound good? Probably they've come from synagogue in a time of worship, and it's not quite the same as what we would do because they were worshiping from sundown Friday to sundown on Saturday, which was the Sabbath. For us, we worship on the Lord's Day, the first day of the week. But many of us might invite someone to join you for a meal after Sunday worship, and you can just kind of get, that sounds so nice. But you get the first clue when it says he was a ruler of the Pharisees. Now, you really got to understand the Pharisees, and probably next week, if I can get it all put together, we're going to spend a little more time just giving you some detail about who these people were and how they thought, because they're so frequently pop up in the Gospels, we really need to understand something about them. But we'll save that for next time, Lord willing. But he was a ruler. He was one of the top ones, okay? You can know a few things about the Pharisees, and one was that they were very intent on preserving the system as it was. They also not only believed that you should keep the Mosaic law, which they should have, but they also had added on to that additional layers of do's and don'ts, and they got to be the judge and the jury and the executioner, if you messed up, about how that law was applied. In fact, they did things like, remember, this talks in the Bible about a Sabbath day's journey. They actually measured it out. In other words, this is how many steps you can take on a Sabbath. You take one step more, you're a Sabbath breaker. So you see that they took the truth that we should have a day of rest and a day of worship, And then they bent it into something that became a burdensome thing on people's shoulders. So that's who he was. And then he invited Jesus. Now you might think, well, that's a wonderful thing to do. But there's a little phrase in the end of verse 1 that says that they watched him closely. Did you notice that? This is a setup. At least they think it's a setup. They're trying to make it a setup. But you know as well as I do, Jesus has never been set up and tricked by anything. Okay, so Every time it is tried, it fails miserably. So it's going to fail miserably here as well. But they're watching him closely, particularly because it was the Sabbath. That was the Sabbath. Now, this was a constant source of conflict and debate between Jesus, the disciples, and the Pharisees and so forth, because they had all these strict codes about what you couldn't do on the Sabbath. But there's several things where he, quote-unquote, violated their Sabbath traditions. Now, Jesus did not violate the law of God, but he violated their standards of that law. There's several of them. One was in Luke 4, he cast out a demon on the Sabbath day. Luke 4, toward the end of the chapter, he healed someone of a fever on the Sabbath day. Luke 6, he allowed his disciples to pluck grain and eat it on the Sabbath day. Remember, that was forbidden. In John 5, he healed a lame man. In Luke 6, he healed a man with a paralyzed hand. In Luke 13, he delivered a crippled woman who was demon-possessed on the Sabbath. In John 9, he healed a man who had been born blind on the Sabbath. So this is a recurring theme. So the setup is, we've got Jesus on the Sabbath, and they were watching to make sure that if he violated the Sabbath, even according to their standards, we've got him in the trap and we can accuse him. We can discredit him. Now, one of the reasons they liked to keep the system as it was, because they controlled the system of worship. There's just something about people that in the flesh and in our pride, we like to tell other people what to do. I don't need to convince you that that's a tendency of the humankind. So that's part of it. But also, it was something that they received honor from the people. They were the experts of the law. It also meant that other people did manual labor, and they usually got a pass from it because we are the religious people. So part of it was they could just walk around with their books and scrolls and not do, any hard manual labor. And lastly, you remember on two occasions, Jesus went into the temple and cleaned house, if I could use that terminology. He overturned the money changers' tables, and he took a whip of cords and drove them out and all that buying and selling, and said, you've made my Father's house a house of buying and selling, a house of merchants. And he says, this is a place of prayer. This is my Father's house. So that got him in trouble to begin with because they controlled the financial system of this whole thing. In other words, you were required by the Old Testament law to give a tithe and other offerings on top of the tithe, a tenth, as part of your worship. But they required that had to take place with Hebrew coins. The money everybody had in their pocket when they bought and sold their wheat or their animals or whatever was Roman coins. So you would go to the temple, you were required by God to make an offering, but stop! You have to go to the money changer's temple, turn in your Roman coins, get some Hebrew coins, and then go over to the place you deposit your offering and put the right coinage in. But guess who controlled the exchange rate? And guess who bent that to their own advantage? Same guys. So they had a vested interest, warped interest, but a vested interest in putting Jesus in his place. Now, verse 2 gives the second part of what's happening. And behold, there was a certain man before him who had dropsy. Now, you understand from other passages of Scripture that the Pharisees, in all of their kind of hypocritical self-righteousness, if they saw somebody who was blind or disabled or whatever, the immediate assumption was they have been struck with that malady because of sin. It is God's punishment that they have this handicap, this condition. And you remember in John, there was that great debate about that man who had been born blind and Jesus heals him. And the debate, the debate all started with, was, is he blind because his parents sinned or because he sinned? We know somebody sinned because that's just where blind people come from in their way of thinking. So the fact that this man happened to be there at this feast, this banquet, this Sabbath meal, I think you can pretty well assume that he was a plant. Now, he was invited, and probably he thought, wow, I don't get invited to too many parties, any meals. I'd be glad to come. But he was there not because the Pharisee cared about him and his need, but because they were trying to trap Jesus. I'm glad Jesus values people, don't you? This Pharisee in this whole thing is just using this guy as a pawn in his attempt to checkmate Jesus. Now, it also says he had dropsy. That's sort of an old term. In modern medical terms, it would be edema. It's when the body retains fluid, and usually it causes swelling, usually in the extremities, the legs, ankles, that sort of thing. In their day, there was no effective medical treatment. Today, such conditions often can be treated with the right types of treatment. But in their day, you'd suffer with it. It was painful. You can imagine the painfulness of that. It also was disfiguring. In other words, you know, with the swelling and stuff, your appearance would not be good, and you would stand out in the crowd. But here's the reason he's the plant. They don't bring somebody who has a bad back, all right? Someone with a bad back, you look at them, you know, unless they're grimacing and holding their back and bent over, you may not be able to detect whether they have some malady or not. So they put somebody in this setting so that everybody looking at him, because of the condition they have, no, there's something wrong with him. He has a problem. He has the dropsy. They put somebody that by his mere appearance would show that he had a need. And what they're setting up is, here's Jesus. It's the Sabbath in the Pharisee's home. Here's this man obviously in physical distress. Now, we just know with Jesus how this is working. He's going to heal him, and as soon as he heals him on the Sabbath, we can accuse him of being a Sabbath breaker. Just read verses 1 and 2 as a total setup. Now, the interesting thing is, as we look at the negative, we can learn some things. Now, we'll talk about Jesus valuing this man in just a moment, and like I said, this would take a while to get it set up before we get into what I want to share with you as far as our application. But this man, I mean, this ruler of the Pharisees, here's what he knew. Jesus had the ability to heal. He also knew that Jesus would be inclined to heal this man. And he arranges to have that, he thinks, take place on the Sabbath so he could trap Jesus. The mere fact that he knew Jesus could heal, and the fact that he knew that Jesus would be inclined to heal the man, should have been enough to humble him and have him fall at Jesus' feet and say, "My Lord and my God," as the disciple did. I mean, no one else has this ability. This was a sign of messianic visitation. This was a sign of God's presence with them. Completely missed that. Completely oblivious to that. Completely blind to that. Now, we might be saddened by it, but we should not be shocked at the blindness of unbelievers. They just can't see it. That you can explain it, you can see it, and we just need to bring them under the power of the Spirit of God, especially through the application and teaching of the Word of God, to pull down those blinders. So there's the setup, if you will. Now, verse 3, it gets really good here. And Jesus answering, notice no one's asked a question. Do you see any question in verses 1 or 2? But Luke puts it, Jesus is answering him. Why does he say he's answering him when it doesn't appear anyone has asked the question? Because the question has already been asked by the setting in which it is. It's the Sabbath, Jesus, ruler of the Pharisees, man with this terrible dropsy. That's the question. The question is on display. No one has to ask it. So Jesus turns the tables on this Pharisee. Jesus answering this situation spoke to the lawyers and Pharisees. Let me ask you a question. Is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? That's what this whole thing was about. And they thought that Jesus was just going to go ahead and heal him. And then they had him. But instead he asked them the question. And you know what all the Pharisees and the rulers and the teachers of the law had to say? It's right there in the text. Verse 4. But they kept silent. You know why? Because there's a lot of people looking in. Remember we talked about that other story where this woman comes in and her repentance and so forth, and she's crying and all that. We talked about at these sort of events, people could just come in and people could listen in to the conversations going on. Remember we talked about their level of privacy would not match our culture. So people were listening, probably people looking into windows. There's obviously, it's plural, the lawyers and Pharisees. So there's multiple people here at this big, big meal. So he asked them, but they kept silent. Why? Because if they said, no, it is not lawful to heal on the Sabbath, then all the people are going to look at those Pharisees and rulers and so forth and say, they are a heartless bunch. Why should we follow them if they don't have any care and concern for people? If they say, of course it is okay to heal on the Sabbath, then he's got them right where they don't want to be because he's having them disprove their own thesis, their own belief system. So by Jesus asking the question, it's just suddenly, and they're just looking at each other, what are we going to do? And he took him and healed him and let him go. Well, no one's saying anything. No one has anything to say. No one's saying it's right or wrong. And he reaches out to this man in compassion and heals him. Now, some of Jesus' healings were, I mean, they're all dramatic and all miraculous. But some of them were just even more evident. I mean, a person who's blind receiving their sight, they can see, and you could start detecting that they could now see. But this man probably was grotesquely swollen. And Jesus touches, Jesus speaks, however he interacted with the man, and suddenly his appearance just instantly changes. Otherwise, there would have been no healing. It had to be an appearance change. Just suddenly, boom, there he is, just perfect, normal. His pain is gone. His immobility is gone. His appearance is now just normal. And he's healed. And then he answered them, saying, "Which of you, having a donkey or an ox that has fallen into a pit, will not immediately pull him out on the Sabbath day?" And they could not answer him regarding these things. Suddenly, it is a one-way conversation. Jesus is doing the talking. Jesus is doing the healing. They're just sitting there staring. Well, let's talk about what we need to learn tonight. And I just want to run through this will be fairly quickly. Actually, before I do that, let me just finish the rest of the text. There's a lot more to this event that takes place at this meal. In verses 7 all the way down through verse 14, he talks to them about don't take the chief seats and the chief places and so forth. In other words, he speaks to them about pride. And then in verse 15, all the way down through verse 24, he gives the parable of the great supper. And, you know, people making excuses why that they won't come. And you know, I've married a wife and I cannot come and so forth. And he says, go out into the streets and bring the poor and the lame and everybody and invite them to come to this great feast. So it's not my point to get into that, but I just want to point out that all of that, all the way through verse 24, all takes place at this one meal. And if you have a red-letter Bible, some of you may, but you don't, but if you have a red-letter Bible, almost all of chapter 14 down to that portion, actually almost all chapter 14, is all red. Jesus is doing all the talking and they're just listening. So let's talk about Jesus valuing people. Okay? As we think about people, there's two options that we need to avoid and then the option that we need to adopt. And all I want to accomplish is this, that Jesus has this mindset of valuing people, and we as we encounter people have to have a similar value system and a similar mindset. So if we can just maybe do this, just a little bit of tuning up our thinking about people in our world, this will help us. Option one is principle is more important than people. This is the Pharisees' position. This is what they believed. In other words, the Sabbath day, it doesn't matter if you're sick, if your ox is in the ditch. Of course, Jesus caught them on that because while no one was looking, they'd have got their donkey out of the pit, okay? They probably wouldn't have advertised it, but nonetheless, they would have done it. And by implication, people are a lot more important than donkeys or oxen, okay? So he catches them on that. But they thought that the principle, the teaching, the reality that of what they believe God had said is of paramount importance, more important than people. Where Jesus rights the ship, if you will, is to point out, if your donkey's in the ditch, if your ox is in the pit, you're not going to leave it there till the next morning, until the Sabbath day. So you're going to rescue it. When it's of that nature, people are more important than the principle. And later he said the Sabbath was made for them, not to just be a burden to them, in essence. So why do people think that? Why do we sometimes think that? It's got to be this way, and it doesn't matter what hurts people or how people are involved. Well, first of all, it protects their system. It protects a particular system. We've already talked about their system. It was a system that was putting money in their pockets and giving and stroking their ego and filling them with pride, okay? It made them look good. It paid well. That's the system. You know, this world has a system too, don't you? I'm not a person that is particularly prone to every conspiracy theory that people sometimes get into. But I do want to remind you, there is a conspiracy operated and perpetrated by the enemy of our souls and the avowed enemy of God called Satan. And the Bible talks about this world system dominated by him. And there is a spiritual conspiracy going on to try to thwart God's work and to corrupt people and to push us into sin and cause us to use people rather than loving people. That's where they were trapped in. Secondly, when you put principle over people, it protects influence. Remember, we talked about how they wanted to tell everybody else what to do. Why? So we get to set the rules. We get to be the big shots. We get to be the people that people look up to. Okay. So here's the danger of that one. The danger of this is if you put principle over people, it tips you toward legalism. In other words, it's the letter of the law. It's what you do and don't do and do and don't do and don't do and don't do. Now, there are certain things. Okay, let me make sure I say this because we'll talk more about it in a moment. But there are certain things that are right and wrong. Okay? But at the same time, some of the things we may have as opinions, and they may be well-founded, deep opinions, we have to understand that we can't just use that to club people over the head with it. Okay? So, enough said. Let's go to the other, which you do not see in the text, okay? This is not what's on display in the text, because this is what you see before you, legalism, is where this man was. But there is another extreme, and I just want to talk about it briefly, and that is option two. People are more important than principle. You can just turn that around. By the way, this is modern United States of America culture thinking of the world today. In other words, as long as you believe it's right, as long as you think it's right, then it's right. You get to set your own rules. Why? Because the happiness and the freedom of humans is more important than principle. If you don't believe it, just look around, all right? Well, in our flesh, apart from the Spirit of God, there is no behavior known to mankind that we can't self-justify that it's right. And we've heard it all, okay? Well, but what about this? Well, people do that all the time. I don't need to get any deeper in that. But here the problem is, if we put people over principle, it sees people as the supreme value, okay? In other words, keeping us happy is what life's all about. Us living a life of freedom and having experiences, and you know, it's all about us, very man-centered. And it also sees people as the only value. It just simply leaves God out of the equation. So both of those extremes of seeing principle is more important than people, that's legalism. Seeing people as more important than principle, that just takes us this way. It tips towards what we would call license, okay? That's the danger here. In other words, do anything you want and it's okay. And by implication is, if you take this way of thinking, then God's got to be okay with whatever we do. And also it leads to this false doctrine, which if it's okay and God has to be okay with it, then it doesn't matter how you live, God's got to let you into heaven. And everybody's going to... God wouldn't send anybody to hell, would he? That's the thinking. I'm not teaching that. That's what I'm saying people would tell you. That's false, and that's where that leads, all right? Now... option number three, and this is where Jesus is, and this is where we need to be. Principles are for the benefit of people. Principles are true. It is real. Honor the Sabbath, keep the Sabbath day. Remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. But that command was not meant to make people miserable. That command was given to make us better, to remember to worship God, to take care of our health, frankly. God knew that he wasn't tired after creating everything in 6 days, but he knew after 6 days of work that you and I needed a day for our bodies to decompress and rest and to worship him, as we do as part of our practice. They were for the benefit of people. And if you notice in Jesus' statement, when he asked it in a question form, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? Is healing a good thing? Yes. Is healing a thing that only God can do? Yes. Is Jesus God and it's proven that he does it, that he did it? Yes. You see, when you understand that God sets the standards, it is for the benefit of people. And these two things need to be seen as a both and, not an either or. It's not principle. It's not people. It's principle working for the benefit of people. And Jesus gets it. And this man who came in, he probably, I just feel for this guy, because he probably thought, oh, this is so nice of this Pharisee to invite me to this dinner with all these important uppity people. And then he finds out, well, Jesus is there. I would definitely suspect that he'd heard something about Jesus. Maybe he'd heard him preach. Maybe he'd been in the synagogue when Jesus had preached, taught the scriptures. We don't know. But he thought, this is a good thing. And I don't know when he figured out, but he realizes, I'm just here not because they care for me, the Pharisee cares for me, but I'm here to be manipulated, to be used. But Jesus punctures through all that. He does not deny the reality of the Sabbath. He does not say the Sabbath is unimportant. He simply says the Sabbath, in essence, is for the benefit of people. And let me show you how this looks like. And he steps forward, as it says in verse 4. They kept silent. He took him and healed him and let him go. And then in his grace, he spends the bulk of this next section, still at this meal, trying to teach the Pharisees how they should really live. Don't set yourself up as the chief seats. Don't just invite people that can be influential in your world and help you to your meals. Go out and invite somebody that can not repay you in the least. That's the kind of people you should minister to. That's the rest of the chapter. You see, he affirms the principle, but he also affirms the value of people. We'll just put all that up there at one time. He affirms the principle. He doesn't deny that the Sabbath's important, but he also affirms the value of people. He does both, and frankly, this is, you'll see this, if you just kind of take that little template and put it through all the encounters of the Pharisees that involve people, Jesus does this again and again and again and again and again. So, we need to be people that find this balance when we approach this world. Yes, sin is sin, right is right, wrong is wrong, as far as the scriptural standards. But at the same time, we can't just come at it as, you're wrong, you're a lousy sinner, because then we wind up with no love and we can be just like the Pharisees. But at the same time, we don't say, oh, it's all right, it doesn't matter about your lifestyle and what you live and how you practice. No, we stand for the truth, but we try to reach that person with something that is the truth and point them to Jesus. It's all summed up in a verse, and I want to let this be our concluding thought tonight. And it's found in Ephesians, and if you're taking notes, do jot down this reference. It's a verse I know you already know. But in 4:15, because of Ephesians, it sets before us this balance, okay, if you will. Verse 15, 4:15, speaking the truth in love, that's us, we should be doing that, who, excuse me, I lost my place, may grow up in all things unto him who is the head, Christ. Speaking the truth in love, that balances it all out. And does Jesus speak the truth? Yes. Was he doing it in love? Yes. Again and again and again. That's the heart of a Savior we have. He deals with us in the truth, but he does it in love. You know the old saying we talk about, we hate the sin but love the sinner? That might sound like a cliche, but it is so true. It is so true. We don't like the sin. We don't like the sin that God forgave us from. And we were once trapped in that web of darkness that Jesus had to save us out of. Yeah, we hate the sin, but we love that sinner because Jesus loves that sinner. And may God give us the opportunity to help them realize that his standards are for the truth. Here's the beauty of it all. This concept, it balances God's values. It balances his value of people and principle. And I'll just leave you with one final statement. This is how we operate. This is standard operating procedure, okay? We operate on God's principles while at the same time love people. Somewhere this week, get ready. Write this on your to-do list. You're going to have the opportunity to do just that. Yeah, you have to stand for the truth, but you have to love people. Jesus is the perfect example. God help us to follow his example.